Good morning. I'm Christopher Purdy, delighted to welcome you all to today's edition of All Sides Weekend, where we discuss arts and culture in Central Ohio. There is a lot going on, and we have three wonderful representatives of our local arts community who have very full schedules for us to talk about. Lita Hoffman makes her debut with me, at least, on All Sides Weekend. I'm delighted to welcome you. Lita is the artistic director of the Contemporary American Theater Company, CATCO. Chris Hamill is the CEO of the Gateway Film Center. They are beginning a new project, a new retrospective of African-American cinema. He will be talking to us about that and all of the offerings at Gateway. If you want something compelling, unusual, thought-provoking, and entertainment in film, Gateway is the place to go. And Julia Newland-Mera is not a debutante. She is a good friend of this program and of the arts and culture in Central Ohio. Julia is the CEO and artistic director, impresario of Opera Columbus. Special day today, yes?
Special day.
Tell me.
It's my second year anniversary with Opera Columbus.
And you've been extended.
And yes. Oh, yes. I guess I can say this now. Yes. The board has extended my contract 3 years. So that's fantastic.
That's a smart board.
Yes, it's a very
Can't always say that about boards, but that's a smart board. Congratulations.
Well, thank
and
you.
Welcome.
That means a lot.
Between the three of you, we have great cinema. Some films going back literally 100 years that haven't been seen. We have wonderful theater, and we have the tango. And the tango comes to us from Opera Columbus and Astor Piazzolla's work, Maria de Buenos Aires, which was first performed in 1968, which is an opera where the protagonist is dead, but boy, does she sing.
Yes.
Yeah, she sings great. So we'll talk about that later. I want to begin with Mr. Hamill and the Gateway Film Center. First of all, pioneers of African-American cinema. There are films that nobody knows except you or have brought you here. There's a great filmmaker called Oscar Micheaux, whose name from most people fell by the wayside. You are bringing him back. The films go into the 1920s and in the retrospective. Talk a little bit about this Pioneers program at Gateway and how you programmed it.
Yeah, thanks. So first and foremost, we became aware of these restorations of films made by black filmmakers 1900 to 1950 before the pandemic began. And we were working pretty hard to bring the first theatrical collection of these to Columbus. And then, as you may know, everything in the world closed. And so while the pandemic was going on, we were still talking to the folks who had organized the restorations. And we're really happy that we've been able to bring this to Columbus. This is the first theatrical presentation of the restorations in the country. So it's a great moment for Columbus. And as you noted, a lot of these films, you not only haven't had a chance to see, you may not have even heard of. There's a collection of feature films, but there's also a startling and beautiful selection of short films. So the Film Center, over the entire winter season, January, February, and March, we're doing public presentations of these. And also there's, as you can probably guess, a lot of organizations in our community who are hosting their own private events to show their teams and, members of their constituencies these films.
Many of these films, if you could see them at all, and I think I read somewhere that 80% of the silent film stock is lost. They're gone. They don't. You can't see them. So the films that you have found, and there are films from the World War I era on your in your repertoire. How did you find them? Because some prints exist only in the Library of Congress, and how much research went into such a big program? You're covering 3 months here.
Yeah, there. So, you know, this program would be larger if you were wrong. Otherwise, if a lot
I'm
of
never
this,
wrong.
If a lot of this film had not been lost, ignored, or not treated properly, there'd be more selections in the program. Two professors, one at Yale and one at the University of Chicago, were able to identify about 3,000 hours of footage. And again, some of these films had never been screened in a movie theater. Their presentations were in people's homes or wherever they could figure out places to show them. So the restoration actually only restored a few hundred hours because of the problem you identified, which is the film stock was too corroded to even do a quote-unquote digitized restoration, especially with the short films. For example, on the opening night a few weeks ago, we showed a short from Zora Neale Hurston. She actually made the short film and sang as the soundtrack to it.
Wow.
And so although it was restored, it still looks pretty rough on screen.
That's interesting, too, about her, because she's a marquee name. At least she is now. She may not have been in her lifetime.
Correct.
As an author and folklorist. So you would think that a great effort would have been to preserve as much of her work as you could. But you were dealing with a corrupt print as well, and it came back only to an extent you could that was possible.
Yeah, that's right. So while the footage, it looks good. Like when you go to the film center and you watch these movies, you definitely will see imperfections. But the thing that I think has been most startling to the audiences so far is how timely the films feel. So, opening night, we showed Within Our Gates from 1920. And Columbus Jazz Orchestra did a live performance of the score because the film is silent in the screening room while people watched. Of course, it was completely full, totally sold out. And I think the number one comment I heard from members of the audience afterwards is, this feels like a film that could be made right now. Obviously, some of the way it's shot doesn't look like contemporary film. But the stories that they're telling are still compelling. And so I think audiences might think about this as sort of an academic endeavor, and it is. But it's also, these films are still timely and entertaining, and I think audiences who join us are going to enjoy them.
Part of the timeliness probably is troubling 100 years later.
That, absolutely.
That we're still having this conversation.
Absolutely.
And these arguments. One of the films I noted was made as in a direct response to Birth of a Nation.
That's correct.
Birth of a Nation is probably the best known first early full-length film, and is a blatantly racist film.
Correct.
And it was noted as such in 1915.
Mm-hmm.
What is the film that was done in response to that?
It was the opening night film, Within Our Gates, which was...
is that Michaud?
It is Michaud.
Yeah.
And, Michaud was such a pioneer in so many ways. Although he was a gifted writer and director, he photographed the film.
He distributed
it, marketed it, found places for people to see it. Of all the films in this program, that's probably the film that's best known. So we felt like it was important to start with it. So, people who might be leery or unsure if they'll enjoy the content would feel confident to come out. But I think now after, a lot of people have seen this, we didn't mention yet, but also in our gallery, we're actually running several hundred hours of footage on loops on big digital monitors right now. And Marshall Shorts, who's a local artist and really incredible talent here in our community, curated four original pieces that he made that are based on the works we're screening. And then about 50 selected images, promotional pieces, etc., from the films in the program. So when people go through the gallery, they'll see these four original pieces, a series of things he curated from the existing material, and again hundreds of hours of the footage that's being presented in loops.
Now, you have several theaters under one roof, and they're busy all the time. In terms of the pioneers of African-American cinema presentations, are the offerings sporadic? Is there something every day? How is that working out? And you're doing it between now and March.
That's correct. So the public screenings, the next one is on February 3rd, and that is The Scar of Shame from 1929. And all of the features are accompanied by shorts. So if you go to any feature screening, you will see short films. Then there's another presentation of the short films in mid-February. And then we're showing another Michaud film, Birthright, from 1938 in March. The gallery is open all season long. So you can go to any film and you can stand and watch some of these really incredible films. And then again, if you're with an organization that believes in this type of program, perhaps you'll be invited to one of the private screenings as well.
Maybe I will.
Maybe you will.
Maybe I will. Haven't been yet, but maybe I will.
It's not
what's
too late.
What's your website so people?
It's gatewayfilmcenter.org. And people can go there and click on Pioneers of African American Cinema. They can read all about it, and they can also read about some of the organizations and individuals who donated a lot of time and money to make sure this program came to Columbus.
And thanks to them. Chris Hamill is the CEO of the Gateway Film Center, presenting, among other things, Pioneers of African American Cinema. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend on 89.7 NPR News, and we're going to transition from African American cinema to 925. And by the way, that's a collaboration between two people I'm looking at, Lita Hoffman, who is the artistic director of CATCO, and Julia Newland-Mera from Opera Columbus, who designed your sets for 925.
That's
is correct. That
correct? Yes. When Julia came to town to work at the opera, I found out that Julia is also a very talented set designer. So Julia and I have been collaborating for the last few months to turn the Rice Center Studio One into a space for 925. And Julia and I have worked together to create this really wonderful immersive space where the audience is no more than six rows from the action. So this really intimate new look at this musical.
If you've seen the movie, you've heard part of the score. Am I right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
925. Yeah. Yes. I think Dolly and Jane Fonda. Right. Okay. Right. All right. So talk about the show a little bit.
Yeah. So, Dolly Parton, obviously is very famous for this song, 9 to 5, among many, many, many other things. She's really become a wonderful household name and a figure in our country. And Dolly Parton has written all of the lyrics and music that you see in 9 to 5, the musical. So, of course, you will hear the song 9 to 5, but you'll also hear lots of songs that were written specifically to be in this musical. When we decided to program this at CATCO, we were looking for a show that was going to be lots of fun, where we could all come in and
fun
have
is
a good time.
Fun is good.
Fun is good. We need fun.
Yeah.
And also, you know, allow us to think about the world around us. And I think that that's what the comedy and the music of 9 to 5 does really well. It talks about three women in a really toxic, negative workplace, and the way that they are able to come together and overcome the systems of that workplace, this horrible boss, Mr. Hart.
One of my favorite roles in anything. Who's playing that? That's
Luke,
a great
Luke
role.
Luke Bovenizer is playing Franklin Hart Jr. He's so much fun to watch.
He's a nice guy, too.
He's
so
a very nice guy playing this very nasty man.
When does 9 to 5 open?
We open next week. So Okay. Our first performance is Thursday, February 2nd, and our opening night is on February 4th.
For a good time, go to the Contemporary American Theater Company, CATCO. Lita Hoffman is the artistic director of CATCO. I want to talk a little bit later about you and your background, because it's, at least as far as I know, it's your first time with me on the show, so I'd love to know more about you. We are going to come back in just a moment and talk to Julia Newland-Mera. I hope I said that right. I say this every time you're on the show. From Opera Columbus, and talk about the tango operetta Maria de Buenos Aires. Until then, don't go away. We are back, All Sides Weekend. I'm Christopher Purdy, delighted to welcome Julia Newland-Mera, the CEO of Opera Columbus, Chris Hamill, who is the CEO of Gateway Film Center, and Lita Hoffman, artistic director of CATCO. And Lita, how long have you been in this position? And tell us about yourself.
Yeah, I've been here 2.5 years.
So where have I been? Okay.
Kate moved here, in the middle of 2020. To a whole new world of theater, tried to figure out, how we made theater when we couldn't gather, and we made some virtual projects, and so I'm just about in my second season of in-person work at the Rife Center.
Where'd you come from?
I came from Chicago, where I was the artistic director at Straw Dog Theater Company, and then I was in Milwaukee before that, spent a number of years at Milwaukee Repertory Theater.
When you got here, you moved here in the midst of the lockdown, as far as
correct.
I could tell. When that began to relax and you began to really get out and work in the community and go back to live theater, what did you find in Columbus to work with?
Yeah, the best thing was really meeting the artists who are living here and making work here. And I've made so many friends and met so many people who are just really pushing what the arts in Columbus can do in various mediums, right? And I think one of the things we've been doing at CATCO is, as well, you know, working with theater artists, trained theater artists, actors, but also working with designers who are fashion designers and sound designers who are DJs, set designers who are visual artists, trying to really meet the whole artist community of Columbus, meet playwrights who are living here in town, and be able to showcase their work.
9 to 5, the musical, runs at CATCO February 2nd through the 19th, I believe. I'll put my glasses
That's
on
correct.
And I can tell. Yes, indeed it is. Then you have a very intriguing play called But You Could Have Held My Hand. It's coming after that. It's coming in March and April.
Yeah, But You Could Have Held My Hand is by a playwright named Jacoby Johnson. And this is a brand new play. This will be its second production ever in the world. So the play is still in the works, figuring out what this world looks like. And it is a beautiful story about four friends. You meet them and they are young kids. So they're adult actors, but they play these young children. You have a 5-minute scene where they're young kids, and then we move on and suddenly it's high school prom. And then suddenly it's somebody's wedding. And you see them throughout the course of 30, 40 years of their life. What do these friendships mean to them? How do they change? And it's, I think, the most theatrical piece that we will have done at CATCO in my time. Because, right, you have to imagine that these characters are different ages. We jump from moment to moment, so we aren't in super realistic settings. And you're going to get to see the set designs I was just looking at yesterday. And you're going to get to see this really beautiful theatrical world. Jamal Brown is doing the choreography for that piece. And so it interweaves music and dance theatricality into this really heartfelt story about friendship.
So when you get back into live theater, you get back into live theater.
We sure do.
Right, okay. You're in the Rife Center where there are two or three different theaters, I believe.
Correct.
And you use all of them depending on the,
yeah,
the needs of the show.
Yeah, we go between the Studio One and Studio Two depending on the needs of the show.
CATCO, the Contemporary American Theater Company, is Columbus's leading theater company, and Lita Hoffman is the artistic director. And I thank you for being with us, and we'll talk more in the
Thanks
course of the program
me.
Today. So, Julia Newland Mehra, the two-year into second year of her tenure of the as the artistic director, the boss of Opera Columbus. Boss is what I should just say for the three of you. Save me some aggravation. With a 3-year extension to your contract, which means you probably bought your house and not renting anymore.
That's right.
Your next production is a tango operita,
yes,
called Maria de Buenos Aires. You, Julia, are not afraid to present things a little bit outside, a little bit, I mean, outside the box, and people are responding.
Yes.
One thinks of the opera you did last year, which was part of the Lavender Scare in the McCarthy era.
Yes, Fellow Travelers. That was a beautiful piece.
Yeah, and that was, there was a lot of, it was very thought-provoking. It was brilliantly done. Mm-hmm. And people, I remember people when the show was over, people didn't leave the theater right away. They didn't get up and just go to their cars. They were sort of, there are pockets of people standing and talking about it during that.
Weeping and talking.
They were weeping, and there was some, you know,
yes,
there
also
was some anger, too, which was,
yeah,
I think, very, very healthy.
Yeah.
Astor Piazzolla, the Argentine composer, was the king of the tango. He worked in all through South America and Latin America. He worked in New York a lot. He was known as kind of a stevedore and a bar fighter and a great musician. What is Maria de Buenos Aires, and is it a bona fide opera? Because it's called a tango operita.
Yes. So it is an opera, but it also very much integrates dance and tango. So one of the things that I really wanted to do this year is it's the 25th anniversary of Festival Latino. And so for me, I really wanted to present the first opera in Spanish in Columbus. We haven't had one yet.
You're right, yeah.
So immediately this piece jumped to mind. And in starting to dig into it, I was very excited in bringing all these artists to collaborate on it. So we have Gerardo Encinas, who's this fabulous fashion designer, originally from Mexico, but now lives here in Columbus. We're very lucky to have him. And he even has his boutique on 3rd Street. So it's really incredible to have him on site and to be able to create these incredible pieces. We're also collaborating with Strictly Tango. So we have 8 professional tango dancers, or tangueros is what I learned. So I'm very excited to have them kind of help with the storytelling as well, make it very evocative. And we are also collaborating with our friends Pro Musica. So that's really fun. And everybody's on stage. So they're on stage with us. They're not in the pit. And it's a true collaborations. So What is the story? I should talk about the story, right? I always forget.
I want to reiterate a line that I think Piazzolla wrote.
Oh, yes.
Describing it, and I alluded to it earlier, and I don't want people to think I made it up, that Maria was born on a day when God was drunk.
That's right.
Which is a great line.
Yes.
But that comes, I think, from the composer. Given that sentence, set the tone for the show. Yes.
So it's a very sensual opera is what I'm going to call it, just because of the beautiful music. It feels very intimate. But the idea is Maria, she is born in the slums of Buenos Aires, and she's a nightclub singer. And a little plot twist, which you're told from the very beginning, she's dead. So she's actually coming back and telling us the story of what happened to her life. But really, it's a love story to tango music, because it's also about this older generation of tango music versus new tango music. So you get to really hear this evolution also in the score. So it's really incredibly beautiful and powerful. We have two, what I would say, expert opera performers who are coming and joining us for this piece. And we also have a local actor who is performing as the narrator. So he kind of helps guide the story along. So I'm very excited about this production. It's directed by Dennis Whitehead Darling, who did our incredible Bohème a couple of years ago at 400 West Ridge.
Yes.
So a brilliant storyteller. So I can't wait. So it's February 24th and 26th.
Southern Theater.
At the Southern Theater, our home theater. But also, we wanted to encourage people to make their resolution this year, 2023, to join us and to actually support more of the arts. So we have tickets that are for $20.23. So make your New Year's resolution and join us.
You know, if you think, having never seen one, that you hate opera or it's ridiculous, and a lot of people like think that. They've never seen it. They've never been, but they think it's just absurd.
Yeah.
In some ways it is, and in the best ways. This show is so thoroughly integrated, and I think, no disrespect to the performers, but it's almost as if the tango is the leading role in the show.
Absolutely, yes.
Now, I asked you before that two singers and a narrator, mm-hmm. Maria and the other two. You almost have to be a porteña. You almost have to be from there and have this in your blood to perform it. Or is that not true?
Absolutely. So Maria's actually, she's not from Buenos Aires. She's from Colombia, but she's done the role 6 times now. So she's very well versed. I have to say also there's different intonations that are different, right? In the accent, and she masters those really well. So that's also important. We also have a chorus of singers joining us, we have a few Argentinian performers in our chorus. I'm really excited about that, too, so that'll be really fun.
I wouldn't be surprised if you began doing more Spanish-language shows, the Zarzuela, the Spanish operetta, which can be kind of bloodthirsty and also charming. There's a range there for you.
Absolutely. And something we're adding to the experience of the performance. So normally we have the titles, right, on either side of the stage. But in addition to having them in English, we are also having them in Spanish. So you do not have to speak English to come to the opera.
Opera Columbus is the company for people who think they hate opera. if you go to one show, you're hooked. And I wanted to remind people that in the height of the lockdown, mm-hmm. when we were first told we can go and be in an audience, if you were shot up and masked, you did a Mozart opera where everybody stood in a Mylar phone booth.
Yes.
So that they kissed through the Mylar so that nobody touched or were spitting at each other. Which was an incredibly creative way to do that. So you found a way, and you did too, you all did, you found a way to function when it was dicey going out there.
Yeah, there was no vaccine, so we had to be very creative.
Now, hopefully, the crowds are back, and people will go to Maria de Buenos Aires at 9 to 5, and people will go into the Gateway Cinema. Chris Hamill, I want to come back to you and ask you, aside from this Festival of African American Cinema, where some of the films are well over 100 years old, mm-hmm. How are you programming the entire complex? Because how many theaters? What, 8 or 9 theaters?
We have 8 screening rooms.
Screening rooms in there. How are you programming that? Do you have a formula or a strategy? And how many movies do you see here before that we may never see?
A lot, to answer your last question first. We truly believe it's our job to make sure that these authentic voices, these storytellers and their works make it to Central Ohio. So the Film Center screens about 1,000 films a year, which is usually pretty shocking to people when they hear the number. I think more shocking is that about 75% of them only play at Gateway Film Center. And while that's definitely true in Columbus, it's also sometimes true in the state. It's sometimes true in the region. And the reason we're so committed to that is not dissimilar from what you were just speaking about with the opera. You know, we played films in 2022 from 66 different countries. Wow. One of those was the United States. The other 65 were not. And if you're a person who has moved to Columbus or the area and you haven't gotten to see or read or hear, you know, the place you came from or the language that you spoke as you grew up or people who look like you or people whose stories seem familiar to you, it can really be, I think, an isolating experience to live here. So, you know, we take the responsibility very seriously to bring you the best stories from around the world. And I think we're doing okay. You know, I think we are.
Well, it's pretty busy when I've been there. So, yeah, I mean, there are people in and out. And it's a very comfortable place, too, to go and see film. Just the surroundings are they're very inviting in a way. So it's a great place to go. Can you give us a few more highlights of the current African American Cinema Festival, films that really meant something to you?
Yeah.
You would recommend?
Yeah. You know, I think for me, I got to watch quite a bit of film before we made the selections that we would screen. And as I mentioned earlier, I think the thing I was most taken by and a little bit surprised by, to be truthful, is how relatable the stories were, how they felt like they were things that could be made now. The incredible acting and sound and quality level. Honestly, some of it felt kind of innovative, even today. And this was a year ago, of course, we were putting the program together. But some of the ways the stories were presented, the way they were lit, the camera angles, et cetera, they were pretty interesting. I think if I could tell people what to go watch, it's the shorts programs. In all sincerity, these may never screen in Columbus or Ohio or the Midwest again, ever.
When you say shorts, you're talking about length, I know, but maybe 20 minutes, I don't know. But what is the range of subject matter covered in those films, the shorts?
Yeah, so, it won't be surprising to anybody that a lot of it is dealing with race issues in the United States. Most of the shorts were made right around World War I to maybe right before World War II. So you've got, you know, a 20 to 25 year period there. And so a lot of them are dealing with the experience of being black in the United States in this period, and also the perspective of an artist who's trying to create something. You mentioned lengths. So some of the shorts are as short as 2 or 3 minutes long. Some of them are as long as 20 to 25 minutes. And a thing I always advise people if you go to shorts programs is, listen, it's wonderful, because if you love the shorts, you will forget how long it is. And if you don't love it, it's over pretty fast. Just going to move on to the next one. You were very kind about the setting at the Film Center. Thank you. I think what has been the most moving for me and the team so far has been these conversations that are happening afterwards. And the audiences are just, I sincerely mean this, they're overwhelmed by the stories these people are telling, how relatable they remain today, and the quality of the films.
Well, again, and no one's ever seen them.
No.
I mean, the general public, certainly, they haven't been available. And my question to you as well was, when these films were new in the World War I era, what was the distribution like for people who were African-American making these films, where there were theaters where they were not welcome in the audience?
Yeah, it was a very challenging time, obviously. The features we've selected all did have some version of what you would call a release today. It wouldn't look familiar to any of us.
No.
Honestly, it's way more familiar to an independent film. You know, if you made a film and you were trying to figure out a way to get audience to see it, their distribution was more similar to that, to be honest. The short films essentially had none. These were people who were making them as labors of love. They were self-financing. They were often the actor their friends and families, members were the other actors in a lot of these films. And there was no distribution model for any of them. So these were truly pieces of art that really were never seen.
Are there actors, and I'm sure there are many of them, but are there actors in this festival who went on to have careers, or were they stopped?
Not really.
Yeah.
To be honest, again, we mentioned Zora Neale Hurston earlier. That's a name people now are familiar with.
Yeah.
They definitely were not in the era. You know, she really didn't come into prominence until
she died.
Correct.
Yeah.
There's a great story about her remains being sort of rescued by Toni Morrison. So the point being, no, there really aren't recognizable names. You immediately talked about Michaud. And while he is certainly, it should be considered one of the great American artists and filmmakers of all time. Again, not a lot of people know who he is.
He also made his living as a Pullman car porter.
He had about 20 jobs.
20 jobs, right.
Yes. It's like an independent film underdog story in a way. He would do these other jobs so that he could make more movies. And he ended up making about 30 features.
And I do have to admire him for seeing Birth of a Nation, probably when it was a new film, and saying, oh, no, we're gonna respond to this.
Birth of a Nation, which you mentioned earlier, is it almost, there are pieces that don't fit with today's society, and then there are just really grotesque pieces of film, and that is one of them. The response that he made to it is so joyous and beautiful and breathtaking that if it was a competition, Michaud won.
We are talking about a Festival of African American Cinema going on at the Gateway Film Center through March, with Chris Hamill, who is the CEO of the center. We'll be right back and talk more about CATCO, Opera Columbus, and film. Don't go away. With the wealth of what is going on in Central Ohio, we could do this show almost every day, a show on arts and culture and the things that you might be interested in going to see and hear in the Columbus area. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend with Julia Nuland-Mera, the CEO of Opera Columbus. Their newest production coming up in February is Astor Piazzolla's Maria de Buenos Aires, with Christopher Hamill, who is the CEO of the Gateway Film Center, and Lita Hoffman, Artistic Director of CATCO. Lita, I wanted to ask you, you have 9 to 5 opening next weekend. I guess you have to call it the Dolly Parton musical, although she's not going to be with you. I mean, she'd want to be with
her
you.
Her voice will be
her
there.
Her voice will be with you. All right. Tell me how you put together a season.
Yeah, I'm always trying to talk to lots of different people in Columbus and think about what Columbus needs. Core to our mission is engaging with the current moment. That doesn't always mean doing plays set now. For example, as we know, 9 to 5 is set in 1979. But thinking about plays that talk to things that people are caring about, right? Bring us joy and laughter and thought and sadness and sort of the wide range of feelings that people are asking for when they go to the theater, but in a way that can promote empathy in our community. Looking at contemporary plays with contemporary in our title, and thinking about how do we talk about right now using all of the tools that theater has to offer.
CATCO also mandates a lot of new work. You do a lot with young people. You do a lot with education as well, don't you, and young playwrights?
One of the reasons I decided to take this job and move here is CATCO's history of working with young people is really fantastic. And so we just finished a New Works Festival for young audiences right before in December. Did 3 incredible works that are written directly for young people and their families to come and see. And so we are continuing to do those programs. And then as well, our education department is in classrooms almost every day with our in-school residencies program. And then we've got summer camps and classes for adults and young people that you can sign up for and come learn about the art of theater.
Very often, I know with the ballet and the symphony and with CATCO, what the audience sees when they go at night is important and wonderful, but it's maybe 30% of what goes
on.
You know, because there's things that you don't see that are geared to kids and young people and people who just want to know more And I know that CATCO always had, and I'm sure still has, a commitment to fostering young playwrights.
Yes,
and young authors as well. Mm-hmm. So if you are a writer for the theater, if you want to work in the theater, CATCO's a good place to go. And Lita Hoffman is the artistic director. 9 to 5 is opening next weekend and runs through February 19th. Other performances coming are But You Could Have Held My Hand and The Wolves. Talk to me. The Wolves.
The Wolves is this beautiful play, Pulitzer Prize finalist, about a young women's indoor soccer team. So high school players on an elite soccer team, and we see the soccer players on this team at, you know, at warm-ups, pre-game, post-game, dealing with the life of what it is to be a teenage girl. Building on the success last season of Schoolgirls or the African Mean Girls play, which won a Columbus Makes Art Excellence Award, had this really great impact, I think, on audiences. We're looking at teenage girlhood one more time this spring, and the complications of what it means to be a young person, hoping that teenagers will come and join us, as well as, you know, adults of all ages, as we think about how we sort of exist in this society, and then how are we a team? How do we come together in these moments we need to rally?
Parents know that navigating the shoals of teenagerhood, oy. So,
yes.
So you could never run out of ideas to engage with that at CATCO. And Julia Newland Marais, let's review Maria de Buenos Aires, an opera filled with the tango, the sort of nightlife, the seedy part of the porteños of Buenos Aires. Talk about your singers a little bit more.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have Paula Rosa, who's done it, I want to say, 6 times already, who was with us in our Traviata last season. We really love working with him, so immediately asked him to come and join us. So we're really excited. And Monica Danilov, who is our Maria. So this is her first debut, really, with Opera Columbus. And she's also done it a bunch of times. But this is a completely new staging. Very excited about that. The other star of the show is the bandino. So it's like a small accordion, right? And that's like the rock star in the piece.
Right.
And so in our collaborations with Pro Musica, they are collaborating with, her name is Laura Cabadon, and she's actually from, and I'm pronouncing it French, so I apologize, but she is also from Buenos Aires. So it's very exciting. And Janet shared that one of her violinists' father used to also collaborate with Piazzolla and doing some arrangements and orchestration. So I love it. It's so many great stories connected to this piece.
Because you don't necessarily have to be French or Italian to do La Boheme or Tosca.
That's
but,
right.
But for this,
you need a specialist.
You really need to, I think, have, what do I know? I'm Boston Irish, but to have the streets of Buenos Aires in your blood in a way,
yeah,
or at least be convincing that way, which not everybody can do.
Yeah.
So if you've hired people who've done it before, clearly they've proved themselves.
Yeah.
There's glamour and there's, I don't even want to say tragedy, but there's a wonderful, sexy darkness.
Absolutely. But at the same time, we wanted to bring some heat to, you know, February in Ohio.
That's the word. That's the word. Yes,
heat.
That's the word. It's caliente. Yes.
Yeah.
That's
so that was
there.
Really important for us. The other things that we've discovered over, you know, this is my, I know it's my second year, but it's really my third season because of how things worked out with the pandemic, is our audience doesn't just want to come see a show. They want a full experience. So, for example, with her Cinderella, we had a princess tea party before you went and see the show. We had the tiara contest, which was a huge hit with adults. And so for Maria, what we're really excited is we're inviting people to join us an hour before the show, and they can come and dance on stage. So show us their tango moves.
Give us lessons. Will we have less?
There will be some.
Some lessons.
There will
I mean,
be some guidance. I'm not going to call them lessons.
I'm going to spare you, and I won't dance, but I'll come early and listen to the music and wave at the people who dance.
Perfect.
Who dance there.
Yeah, so
Maria
really
de Buenos Aires by Astor Piazzolla is at the Southern Theater February 24th and 26th.
Yes.
Thanks to Opera Columbus. You're also going back to a big corner of the repertoire, Rigoletto.
Yes.
The tragic court
Top
jester.
Five.
Yes. music by Verdi. That's a collaboration with the Columbus Symphony, yes?
Yes, absolutely. So we're very excited to be doing grand opera at the Ohio Theater because we need a really big pit for this one.
Yeah.
But not only that, because of the scale of the theater, it also calls for really big scenery. And so we are setting it in 16th century Mantua. The costume designer is the wonderful costume designer who did Tosca with us last year. Beautiful pieces. He's creating like 40 original masks for the show. It's setting it's supposed to be set over 3 days, but we're setting it over one crazy 24 hours at a masquerade ball. So it's going to be incredible, and it's all the iconic operatic sounds that
I won't sing.
So even if you've never heard opera, but you play Grand Theft Auto, then you know the score. It's a win-win for everyone. I actually should say Grand Theft Auto has been fascinating to see, because at our Traviata performance, we actually had patrons who came and said, I only know it because of this video game. I wanted to see the show. So it's fascinating how we're really bringing our community together.
Listen, whatever gets them in the door.
It's
rock
fantastic.
On.
Yes, yes. But what's really exciting also for Rigoletto is we're collaborating with Rossin. He is conducting.
Rossin Milanov.
Yes.
The artistic director, the conductor of the Columbia Symphony.
And it's a true, partnership in terms of the collaboration. So we go to each other's meetings. We talk about, what does it sound like, but also what are the visual spectacles. So it's been really fun to have them as partners.
Lots going on in Central Ohio. Lots going on in Columbus between the tango, between the film, and between theater. We have a few minutes left, so I want to talk to everybody about your future. Katko, what's your strategic? Here we go. Is my 80-year-old MBA. What's your strategic plan for the theater? What are you going to be doing?
Yeah, we are just in the
and
middle
why?
of planning next season and thinking about the stories that we want to bring. I think what folks are going to see is more new works, more shows that are bringing lots of people together to celebrate who we are as a community, and an expansion of our education work as well, looking to meeting with more partners for our after-school programs, our work in schools, our work in the classrooms. And we're really here to figure out how contemporary theater can help build a community of empathy here in Central Ohio.
Do you ever do you wonder, is it even a germane question, if you were to come up with a new play that is specific to this community?
Absolutely. Yeah, we would love, and I've got a list of ideas.
Do you really?
About stories we can tell about Columbus, Ohio. And I'm looking, in meeting playwrights and thinking about how we might commission those pieces in the future.
Because something that was very memorable was done a number of years ago with the opera, an opera called The Flood, which mm-hmm. was a true mm-hmm. story about how the West Side was flooded around the First World War. And it was my wife and I went to that, and she whispered to me that her grandmother as a little girl lived through that flood. So that means she wasn't the only one. There were people a few generations removed who heard about the actual event mm-hmm. as it was happening. So the piece, which was a wonderful piece anyway, had a lot of resonance to a lot of people in the community. So I think whenever you can do that, it would be pretty good. It's reward season in film, you mentioned. What does that mean for you?
Well, the world really pays attention when the Oscar nominations come out. So they were announced on Tuesday morning. We had our annual Oscar nominations breakfast at the Film Center where it's like film critics and cinephiles and film lovers sort of gather and watch the nominations. To be blunt, I don't really have a stake in who wins, but I love it that there's this added interest in some of these great stories. And so right now, this weekend at the Film Center, we have 25 films on screen. I think we're representing about 60 of those nominations that were announced on Tuesday. And a lot of those are American independent and films from other parts of the world that people probably may not be aware of, but certainly haven't had a chance to see.
Now that you bring that up, I looked at the list of nominees, and I mean, I used to get out a lot more than I do now, but I didn't know many of the titles.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a distribution issue? Is it me just not getting out enough? Or there were a lot of independent films where distribution is always going to be a challenge.
Right.
If you don't have a big studio behind you.
I don't think there's any reason to feel any way about it. There's more opportunity to see film than ever before. I mean, there's so many streaming channels and there's so many options. It's tough as a consumer to know what's good and what isn't so good and what they might be interested in. So I think the real value of award season, whether you're someone who follows it closely, you can't wait to see who the New York film critics decide is the best film of the year, or you only pay attention around the Oscars, it's sort of helpful in deciding what you're going to watch and what you're going to prioritize. So if audiences had not heard of Todd Field's Tar, which has one of the great performances of the year by Cate Blanchett, it got quite a few nominations, and hopefully audiences will see it and decide on their own how they feel about it.
I wanted very badly to see it, and because of you, I got to see it at Gateway, and that's all I'm going to say about it. That's fine. But I was grateful to be able to see it, and you know, it's one of my many trips to Gateway that I'm grateful for. We are talking about arts and culture today in Central Ohio on today's All Sides Weekend. I'm Christopher Purdy. We've been talking about tango operas. We've been talking about grand opera. We've been talking about the Bandayon and the Pro Music Chamber Orchestra, new plays that Lita Hoffman, who is the artistic director of CATCO, has in her sight or planning. You probably are looking at works, too, that are still percolating. You know, and you're waiting for that author to call you and say, I just typed the last period. Come read it, something like that. Yeah. So that's going on. So you are fostering young playwrights. I want to really reiterate that point, that sometimes you really, when you're a presenting organization, you also have to be part of the creative process.
Yeah, and I think one of the wonderful things about CATCO is, you know, we are really looking for 98% of our artists live in Central Ohio and work with us. And so from playwrights to actors to designers and technicians, we're really looking for folks to reach out and come join us in the work that we're doing. And we have opportunities for, you know, students as young as 5 and adults all the way up to 100. And so really, you know, excited to be a place where local artists can come and work.
Lita Hoffman is the artistic director of CATCO, the Contemporary American Theater Company. Chris Hamill is the CEO of the Gateway Film Center. Any films on the horizon we should know about before they get here?
Yeah, lots.
Buzz. Give me some buzz.
The Sundance Film Festival is wrapping up right now. And if you are a person who wants to figure out what you're going to be watching in 3 to 6 months, just go to their website at Sundance and see what won. The thing that we love about that film festival is they truly, truly love these filmmakers. They are doing everything they can to make sure there's a path from I have an idea to I make a film to people get to see it till it gets into distribution. And for a lot of us, if these films don't get into distribution, you'll never see them.
You'll never see them.
So yeah. It's that time of year. The festival seasons have started. And there's lots of things coming.
And the Festival of African American Cinema that is ongoing now at Gateway, that's going to go through March, some of these films have never been seen, and they may never be seen again. This is the opportunity to go.
Yeah, if you care about seeing these works, make it a priority. Come to the Film Center in February or in March. Come check out the gallery installation. Again, Marshall Shorts, local artist, great person. Curated that gallery, and it is both educational and entertaining. I think you'll leave with new ideas from films that might have been made 100 years ago.
You'll leave knowing that you've been a part of history and you've seen important films.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is something that I think you get whenever you go out to see something of quality from CATCO, quality from the Gateway Film Center, and quality from Opera Columbus. One more time. We're going to learn the tango,
yes,
with Julia and Opera Columbus, February 24th and 26th, Maria de Buenos Aires by Astor Piazzolla. We have a minute and a half left, and I'm going to spend it with Bobby Gerbrick, whose name I always mispronounce. Bobby is the assistant producer, has been here for a number of years. He is the one responsible for getting me on the air, that not quite making a fool of myself. He makes faces and laughs at me through the glass. He is invaluable, as is his colleague, Marcus Charleston. But Bobby is leaving us, and I want to say thank you to Bobby very much. Your mom and dad did good. If mom and dad, if you're listening, you did good. Pay the tuition. Thank you all very much. Thank you, Julia Newland-Mera from Opera Columbus. Thank you, Lita Hoffman from CATCO. Thank you, Chris Hamill from Gateway. There's a lot going on out there, so don't be like me. Get off the couch and go out in the community. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend, Arts and Culture. Get out there.